You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort support serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And it's an opportunity for us to field your questions. Questions come to questions at drhoffman.net. With me today, of course, is Layla. Layla Mutin is our resident nutritionist, and together we endeavor to answer your questions. And it's really a fun experience for me because, well, you never know what you're going to get. And I got to put on my thinking cap. Fortunately, I have a lifeline with Layla. Because if I can't come up with an answer, Layla's going to compliment me. So, how you doing, Layla?
Hey. Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good. Are you settling down to the fall routine? Kind of.
Yeah, you know, it's 80 degrees out and I still love it. So that's okay. It's not quite a fall routine for me yet.
You know what this is like? The past few days in New York, it's boringly nice. It's kind of reminds me of growing up in Southern California. It's like, another 80 degree day. And the problem with 80 degree days is it makes you really feel guilty to sit inside. Today I've been doing like paperwork. I've been like organizing. I've been, writing an article and doing research for my show inside. Mm-hmm. And I, apart from a little bit of exercise that I actually did inside because I went to the gym. I'm feeling guilty about being inside. That's, one of the, disadvantages of living in Southern California.
Right. Oh, my gosh. I got out a little bit to run errands, so I actually got to be outside, which is nice, recording my own podcast this morning. So, but these days are beautiful now, and the transition will be even nicer. Open all the windows.
I got to say, for us New Yorkers, for some people, stormy weather is foreboding, but for us New Yorkers who lived through 9/11, a clear blue, low humidity, perfect, sky day, cloudless, is synonymous with 9/11, which is happening, of course, this week. And so, it's kind of like, I remember the days in the aftermath of 9/11, we would be scanning the skies, for low flying mm-hmm. planes, and mm-hmm. every time you heard a jet noise, it kind of had a little PTSD.
Exactly.
So,
or a loud sound or anything like that. True. Oh gosh. I can't believe it's been 23 years.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. It seems like just yesterday.
23.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It does.
Yep.
It does.
So anyway, coming back to other existential problems that threaten the survival of mankind, just for a little light diversion, we'll get away from the threat of terrorism to another, what I consider an existential threat, and I wrote about it in our newsletter this week. Before we get to questions, I just want to mention that you might want to check out drhoffman.com. And if you haven't yet already subscribed to our newsletter, please do, because it comes to you as a weekly free message in your inbox, and you can read my contribution and Layla's contribution. And you have no obligation to read it, because, stuff in your inbox, so if I'm interested, I'll read it. Not, I'll delete it. There's no cost to you. This week, I wrote about microplastics.
Yeah. And,
you know, so here's the thing. You know, we always knew that, I mean, you knew this too, is that microwaving something in plastic, not a good idea.
Yes.
Right? And
dioxins, I believe, are released.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And so we talked about the issue of compounds leaching from the plastic. You know, that we know that, for example, if you have I hate, you know, plastic bottles of water. You know, sometimes, you know, if I'm somewhere and somebody hands me a plastic bottle of water, it's like in a pinch, I'll drink it. But I don't, that's not the way I usually like to consume water. Okay. Like if I'm on a hike or something and they're handing out free water or something. You know, recently, you know, when I was in Alaska, you know, before we went out on a cruise, they, you know, the crew on the ship we were on said, here's a bottle of water, you know, you could take, you know, stay hydrated while you're hiking. Okay, fine. Plastic. The thought was that it was the chemicals that were leaching from the plastic. Chemicals, like whatever, styrenes and you name it, you know.
Bisphenol A.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. All that stuff. Well, we now become aware that there's another problem, which is the microplastics, which are actually physical particles of plastic, which, you know, we know that, I mean, there are these heart-rending videos of, you know, turtles who have a, you know, plastic straw up their nostrils, you know, and, or, you know, sea otters trapped in plastic fishing net. You know, and it's like a heart-rending spectacle because there's a lot of junk in the oceans. We know that. And there's a tremendous amount of junk. We use other foreign countries as dumping grounds for it, you know, and we're blighting their environments. And, you know, we have landfills and so on. And, of course, there's recycling. And in the article, I talk about an encounter I had with a, you know, on a trip when I went diving. You know, on the boat was a guy who's in the plastics business. And I asked him, you know, it's a problem because there's a lot of controversy about this, too much plastic. It's no, we're recycling now. We're recycling it. Well, it turns out that we're recycling about 6% of it, but it really is kind of it puts like a happy face on the plastic industry. And it's classic greenwashing because really a lot of the plastic is not recyclable. They don't bother to recycle. It's not economical to recycle it. Mostly it just gets dumped. And there's, you know, hundreds of billions of tons of plastic, and we just keep making more plastic. And, and I just think of the plastic that I personally use and throw out, and I carefully recycle in the hopes that it's going to end up being my next, you know, athleisure, you know, because a lot of clothes these days is actually plastic, right? You know, let's face it.
Right. Polyesters and things, wash and wear.
Oh, and they're great fabrics. They're amazing because
They're great fabrics. And I thought I was saving on a dry cleaning bill, and now I have to consider what I'm wearing.
Yeah,
because of the plastics.
Exactly, because you know it used to be, you know, you know, like in the old days, like you know, you get like a leather jacket that was like vinyl, and it was like really terrible. It was horrible.
Pleather.
Yeah, exactly, and or you know, like it was Naga hide or something. And, or you would get like a rayon, you know, Nehru jacket or something, you know, it's kind of like, and it was absurd, you know, stiff, you know, really hot and didn't breathe. And now they have these amazing fabrics. So all this, you know, okay. So this is all plastic, you know, containers and blah, blah, blah. The problem is that it breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces and eventually, these pieces through wave action or through soil, you know, friction in the soil, they become microparticles. They can't even be seen with the naked eye. And we've underestimated the prevalence of these things because we just didn't have techniques to discern it. Ordinary microscopy can pick up particles of a certain size, but they actually did a new study with a new technique called dual laser microscopy. Don't ask me what it is, but they figured it out at my alma mater at Columbia. And they now estimate that there's like, you know, nearly a quarter million particles of microparticles in a bottle of water. So there's particles. So these particles are so small that they can be taken up into the bloodstream. They could actually be breathed in because they're also aerosolized. They're so small. And they now have been found in human brains. They've been found in...
Oh my gosh, so much for the blood-brain barrier. Wow.
Right, the blood-brain barrier we thought was protective. You know,
you'd make... compromise.
These particles actually can infiltrate the brain. Also, you know, when you... In these procedures where they catheterize you and they do angioplasty and they kind of roto-rooter the junk out of your arteries, they actually have examined pathology specimens of the gunk, and they find that the more microplastics, the more gunk, and the more risk of subsequent cardiovascular events. So,
it's a
huge problem. Very few people are talking about it. I do mention that RFK is talking about it. This is not a political endorsement, but it's one of those things that I think is really at the apex of the environmental movement. You know, we talk about reducing carbon, you know, our carbon footprint and so on, but I think we need to really reduce our plastics footprint.
Absolutely.
We need to come up with our, he actually has a 10-point plan, and some of it, you know, is, you know, these one-off bags, you know, the plastic bags, bad idea. But also just more biodegradable compounds. There's got to be a way to make these things out of some form of cellulose that biodegrades, you know, like old-fashioned paper or wood.
And they're doing
some of that. They're doing more of that. But
There are biodegradable bags that are used for your compost, for example.
Yeah.
They do biodegrade, but not fast enough. But I don't know how how people would respond to something that's kind of becomes a little yucky.
it's a little flimsy. It's a little flimsy, frankly.
Exactly. It's a little flimsy.
The other thing is there's a lot of impetus from the petroleum industry, because this is actually a fairly sizable percentage of the petroleum that we consume gets made into plastics. And it's a huge industry. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, if not multi-trillion dollar industry. And it's going to be hard to stop it.
It is. It's the convenience of it more than anything.
Sure.
Even if you're in a hospital, if you work in a hospital, an IV bag is plastic.
Oh my God,
tubes are plastic. I mean, think about that. If you watch an old movie and the scene is in a hospital,
glass bottles for the
IV.
Yes.
Look at all that.
Yes.
There is no plastic anything. There are no plastic clamshell salad containers and things. Oh my goodness, our cans are lined in plastic. Oh, it's everywhere.
Indeed.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's a concern. So anyway, so check out that article. There's a lot of detail in that article. And, you know, I want to bring it to people's attention. Questions at drhoffman.net is the place to send questions. And I just want to mention before we get into questions, something interesting is for those of you who are users of supplements. You've heard me talk about Fullscript. Fullscript offers a reliable and trustworthy source of quality supplements, supplements that I use, prescribe to my patients. Layla is a big user.
Yes.
That's where I order my supplements from because I can depend on them. They're always stored and shipped correctly, and it's a safe and secure way with world-class service to obtain your supplements. So drhoffmanstore.com, and something special is coming up this next week. We've got
next
a sale.
Next week, September 17 and 18, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I've asked myself, you know, why did Fullscript opt to do this sale instead of doing a Labor Day sale? Because a lot of people do Labor Day sales.
Yes.
And so why do they opt to do it now instead of Labor Day? And here's the reason is, first of all, Labor Day is, there's a lot of downtime and people shop, you know, they get bored, they shop, they see new clothes, it's getting colder. Maybe they want to buy new clothes. Maybe they're thinking of getting a new car, you know, it's a new
mattress.
Yeah. Whatever, you know, it's like, okay, summer's over, whatever. But it's not until people come back for a couple of weeks that they kind of get organized. And maybe they get home from summer vacation or from summer activities and they look at the vitamin larder and they go, oh my God, you know, I just plumb run out of this or that or the other thing. And so I think it's because people get a little more organized in mid-September. The first week of September is a train wreck.
It's like kids are going back to school, getting back into a routine.
Right.
It's just after Labor Day. People are still coming down off their vacations.
You know, got to go back to work and et cetera, et cetera. Right. So anyway, that's why the sale is the 17th and 18th. So take advantage of that sale for discounts, stock up. It's a good time to, you know, buy some reserves because, you know, that's what I always do is, you know, if I run out of, you know, astragalus, that's one of the things that I take. You know, I'm low on, I'll get like six bottles, you know, go for it.
Absolutely. Because of the discount, you know, everybody, please remember to take advantage of it. It's September 17 and 18 only. And Dr. Hoffman will be offering 10% off all products in his online full script supplement dispensary. Remember, September 17th and 18th. It's 2 days only.
Get an additional 10% off. DearHoffmanStore.com is the place to go.
Yes.
Okay. So let's get to questions because that's what this is, you know, Q&A with Layla.
Right. We've got an email here from Anthony. Anthony says, is this a bad study? I ran across this today. I noticed it was observational, so I was curious what your take would be. Are you ready for this heading? Keto diet doubles the risk of heart attack and stroke.
Okay, so let's distinguish. Yeah. Let's distinguish between studies and the reportage about studies, because this is a big deal, is that medical and scientific journalism, I think, is abysmal in this country. It is. And the reason is that I think a lot of the people who report on science and health have really poor backgrounds in science and medicine. And they're not trained to pick apart studies and critique them. And in fact, I got to say that most doctors aren't, because in medical school, we were, you know, shown studies, but we weren't, you know, asked to evaluate whether the studies were, had a good or bad methodology. And I think one of the things that I wish medical students would learn more about is how to pick apart studies, because doctors constantly read about studies. They're often pitched studies by pharmaceutical companies saying, this, my drug is great, and here's the study. And they just look at the top line and they don't look at the actual details. Okay. So, I'm pretty sure that the study, say it again, the headline.
Oh, keto diet doubles the risk of heart attack and stroke.
Okay. So hold
on. And I'll give you a quote
you'll get to it in a minute. I'm pretty sure that the study did not say, I'm pretty sure that the study was not a study of people on the keto diet for a long period of time, compared to people not on a keto diet, with a finding that, over 5, 10, 15, or 20 years, that the risk of being on a keto diet was doubled in terms of heart attack and stroke. And the reason for that is, A, you can't find enough people on a keto diet. They won't adhere to a keto diet for that period of time. No study is powered to have a statistically reliable outcome with maybe a handful of people. Plus, you can't do studies for that duration. You know, you just can't.
Right.
You're not going to get a grant to do a study. You know, anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. First of all, the quote is, our study found that regular consumption of a self-reported diet low in carbohydrates and high in fat was associated with increased levels of LDL or bad cholesterol and a higher risk of heart disease.
Okay.
So they based this number one only on LDL.
End of story. So it is, okay, it's fairly typical. So let's explain this. What happens when you go on a keto diet? Now, by the way, I'm not advocating that everyone should go on a keto diet, but from you actually have a lot of direct experience with a keto diet, because essentially that's what Dr. Atkins was recommending. And early in your career, you had the good fortune to work with Dr. Atkins before his untimely death. So during that time, what did you see? What happened? Because he's a cardiologist, and people came to him expressly to reduce their risk of cardiovascular events. And
exactly.
What did you see happen to those people? Were they dropping like flies?
No, none of them. And by the way, when you first start a ketogenic diet, you don't go running to your cardiologist within 4 to 6 weeks after embarking on that diet to get your cholesterol checked. You have to wait 3 whole months for your lipid levels to come around and normalize, number one.
To acclimate to the diet, right?
To acclimate, yeah. Yes. And at that point, things get better. Okay. But one of the first things that really gets better, and Dr. Hoffman, you alerted me to this, and I've seen this in practice, triglycerides fall off a cliff.
Yes.
On a ketogenic diet.
They can go from like as little as 350 to 50. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And that's an independent risk factor
for
cardiovascular disease. The other thing that happens is that LDL cholesterol becomes a big, fluffy, pattern A buoyant particle, which is way less atherogenic than a small, dense pattern B.
So here, just to clarify, what we're talking about is not so much the quantity of the LDL, but the quality of the LDL.
Quality, and yes.
So quality matters, too, when it comes to LDL, because two people might have identical LDLs of like 150, and one person has predominantly a B pattern, which is small, dense LDL, and another person has large, fluffy LDL, which is more benign. So that is a consideration. All right. So the other thing that's had happened is people lose weight, their blood sugar improves, hemoglobin A1C over time will improve, although short term you'll see improvements in your finger sticks or if you were in a continuous glucose monitor, you're going to see immediate improvements. And those are important markers. You'll also generally, with a keto diet, see a reduction in C-reactive protein, which is an important marker. And, oh, by the way, and you pointed this out because it's kind of interesting that LPA is a marker for cardiovascular disease. And LPA behaves paradoxically when it comes to diet because while cholesterol can come down with a low cholesterol diet, as long as there's not too much sugar, or refined carbohydrates, LP little A actually goes down in response to more saturated fats, paradoxically.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
So, although that's not a fix for people who have genetically high LPA, it may come down 10-20%. That's why they're not suggesting that anybody with an elevated LPA just go on a keto diet necessarily. But here's the thing. This is, in summary, they choose one marker, which is, to me, kind of a bogus marker for cardiovascular risk. I'm not saying that LDL is inconsequential, because for some people at risk it is. In general, if your LDL goes up, when your weight comes down, your blood pressure comes down, your blood sugar improves, your inflammation gets better, all these things, your particle size improves,
your
HDL goes up.
Your blood pressure comes down.
You're better off. So the alternative headline could be, only one thing goes up and everything else gets better when you go on a keto diet. And here's another point made about the LDL rise. This is something that's alarming sometimes. And if they pointed this out, and I think you might have noticed this too at Atkins, if you are fat, and insulin resistant, and I've seen this, and you go on a very low carb diet, your LDL will come down.
Yes.
If you are very metabolically fit, say you're, an athlete and you're trim, you have like 12% body fat and you go on a keto diet, it's in those people predominantly that the LDL will go up quite high. It can go up alarmingly high, but those are precisely the people who are least likely to get cardiovascular disease.
Exactly.
So there's a...
And we have to also remember that the ratio changes because HDL is also going up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And triglycerides are falling off a cliff, as we said earlier. It's a better lipid profile overall because particle is a better quality as well of LDL.
So, I think this is another example of journalistic malpractice, but I also think that the study authors have an agenda. And, you know, their agenda was to demonstrate that, oh, you know, you idiots out there who are following the keto diet, you know, you're going to kill yourself.
Mm. And this is the American College of Cardiology. Mm-hmm. I believe they're one of the bodies of in medicine that are taking money from pharmaceutical. I mean, we're finding out so many things about who are brought and sold. Another example of this is I think it's the AMA versus the American Association of Family Physicians. Mm-hmm. The American Association of Family Physicians says, in talking about blood pressure, I'm digressing here now off this topic.
Okay.
Is if your blood pressure is consistently over 140 over 90, you have high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. But the AMA says no, 120 over 80 is pre-hypertension.
Yep.
Well, it's known that AMA takes money from pharmaceutical industry, whereas the AAFP, mm-hmm. American Association of Family Physicians, not so.
Yeah.
And they have gone on record as saying, no, we're not following this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I do have concern for people of borderline blood pressure because it might be
a
harbinger.
We don't want anybody walking around with, exactly. But, you know, the guideline, they're going lower and lower.
Yes.
How low can you go?
How low
like
can you
say, Dr. Hoppe, on cholesterol guidelines, on blood pressure guidelines.
Yep.
It's becoming so that everybody's on some kind of medication.
Yeah. It's an example of pharmaceutical capture because, you know, there's only a certain number of sick people. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like, you know, a sardonic joke that we used to tell when I was training at the VA is, what do you call a veteran with two legs? And the answer was pre-op. And because it was a sardonic joke because the veterans were in such bad shape that they had circulatory disease and most of them were smokers. And, you know, they were going to end up on the operating table eventually. Well, you know, in a similar way, there's only a certain finite number of people who are sick with acute diseases in mm-hmm. this country. So let's put people on chronic medications, antidepressants, antihypertensives, cholesterol-lowering medications, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
To find remedies for things that you never thought you even had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really something. Not my goodness. So, okay. Again, it's not all about the LDL. Another thing to say about this particular study.
Yeah.
The study evaluated health data for 305 people from the United Kingdom who were identified because they reported mm-hmm. eating a keto-like diet.
Yeah, that's the
for
other.
A 24-hour period.
Thank you.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I had a. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I had a burger and some crisps the other day, and I was on a keto diet. Yeah, I think that's poor selection criteria for people on a keto diet, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
this study.
You know, also.
And these types of studies get grants, unfortunately. That's our tax dollars at work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What publication was that? Were the headlines so misrepresented it?
This was Keto Diet Doubles the Risk of Heart. This is on WebMD.
Oh, WebMD.
But it's American College of Cardiology,
okay. mm-hmm.
as well as Harvard Health.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Harvard
Health. But,
I mean,
yeah.
look, how can a place that is the most prestigious center institution of learning in the United States, if not the world, get it wrong? I mean, come on. You got to believe what it's Harvard Health, after all.
Oh, my goodness.
Trust the science.
That again. Not again, Dr. Hoffman.
Never again.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, okay. Good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. When we return, give us a preview of what questions we're going to tackle.
Oh, there's this product called Sarazen. It's a synergistic complex of Boswellia and ginger. It can help with pain and sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree? What are your thoughts on this kind of combination?
Okay. We'll tackle that, sort of a consumer evaluation of something that somebody has seen out there. I'm tempted to give our number 877-726-8255 as if I'm on my live weekend radio program. But you can use that number, by the way, to record a question, if for any reason you're hesitant about sending an email, some people prefer to record a question, the ease of just calling in and talking to an answer box. But if you want to write a question, send it to questions@drhoffman.net and we'll answer it during our weekly Q&A with Layla, which continues with part two coming up. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.